Hey everyone, I'm Josh Kagan.
And I'm Molly Lewis.
And this is a special sneak preview of a new podcast that we will be introducing in 2016 called The Peanuts Gallery, where the two of us talk about our favorite and not so favorite Charlie Brown specials.
Today we're going to be talking about a Charlie Brown Christmas special. That's the title, isn't it?
A Charlie Brown Christmas special?
I think that's what it's called, right?
It is called A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Okay.
Special.
It is special, parenthetically.
We're good at this.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here. I'm going to turn your mic down a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
It may come as a surprise to you. You're a bit loud.
The loudest man on the planet. We're talking about the first and arguably best Charlie Brown special today, A Charlie Brown Christmas. This is the Charlie Brown special that we think of when we think about Charlie Brown specials.
And it's sort of the one that it's a good one to start this podcast with because it is what we compare all the future specials to.
Absolutely. And it's a great way, and we'll talk about this a little later on in the episode, it's a great way to meet all of the characters. If you have no idea who any of these large-headed children are, it very quickly sort of runs through the entire cast of characters, and you kind of understand what makes them all tick. It is definitely a special of its era because it's very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
For a special that is about, like, commercialism and about the selling of Christmas, ostensibly, we'll get into that as well. It starts very gently with a screensaver of children skating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you described, Molly, as a frozen hellscape.
Well, because when we started watching, there was no sound, so it just looked like you're panning over this empty, personless, featureless wasteland.
Well, I've had
some naked trees.
I've had this theory for a very long time that there was some sort of industrial accident in this neighborhood that killed all of the adults and gave all the children giant heads.
Well, that might be the reason all the adults talk like wah, wah, wah.
Yes, their mouths have been melted over. It's horrible.
It's just the, like, I have no mouth, but I have to scream sort of animation.
Yes.
That's why we never see them.
But it starts, right, because it's like that Twilight Zone episode where they all end up having piggy faces.
Mm-hmm.
So right away, we're going into this with a lot of respect.
Should we, I assume that anybody that listens to this thing, A, is friends of ours, and B, has seen the special already, but do we want to run it down real quick?
In what respect?
Just sort of a synopsis, I would say. Or do we want to just kind of go blow by blow?
Here's a synopsis.
Okay.
Charlie Brown is sad about Christmas.
Everyone kicks him for it while he's down.
He is roped into directing the holiday play, which we never see.
No, we never get closure on that.
And then he buys a tree, and it's not that great, but then it turns out it's okay.
Yeah.
Synopsis.
And see. We should have set a spoiler alert before we started into that.
Nothing happens.
Yeah.
I
was thinking about this because I've watched this special probably more than in, because my actual pre-existing knowledge of Peanuts specials is very limited to the ones we had on tape when I was a kid. And so I was kind of having a hard time seeing the wood for the trees on this because I knew the entire thing verbatim when I was a child.
Yeah.
But the thing I realized was one of two things. One, we don't ever see how the holiday play turned out.
Or even what it's about.
No.
It is maybe the story of the Nativity.
But how are they going to fit in a tree and a Christmas queen?
Yes.
And a penguin?
Well, I feel like in that, and we'll get to that, but I feel like when Lucy is running Snoopy through all of his animal impressions, she might have just thrown the penguin in.
Just to test him.
Just to test him. Just to throw him off a little.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I also realized there's no musical numbers, and a lot of the later ones have music, like extended, like I'm going to sing about flying this kite kind of. No, I guess that's the musical proper.
That's the musical. No, but I mean, when we get into.
There's no like Joe Cool or anything.
No, there's no Joe Cool. There's no Little Birdie. There's no Lucy Says. It's not a musical, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Because with the exception of Your Good Man, Charlie Brown. Generally, the music, the song music in Peanuts specials is really bad.
Yes.
Although, as we were just talking about, recently, there was a special on ABC celebrating the 50th anniversary of Charlie Brown Christmas, which was, I would say garbage. It was a garbage special.
It was hot garbage, yeah.
With the exception of, the medley of, Boys to Men singing Joe Cool and Little Birdie, which was the first time I enjoyed either of those songs. But it is, like the strip, it is more about moments than it is an arching overall thing. And it is more about the journey than the destination.
Yeah.
Because coming from a strip where it's like four panels a day and maybe an arc a week, life just sort of keeps happening. And that's the nice thing about the special is that it just, it is genuinely like a slice of life, which is why it's okay if we don't see the Christmas play. And it's okay if we don't actually know what happens in it or why there's a penguin. It's just like, this is the 22 minutes we happen to see the Peanuts characters.
And the arc that resolves is like Charlie Brown's mopey about Christmas and he tells Lucy about it. And at the end, they kind of go, oh, yeah, right. Christmas is about Jesus, I guess.
Does that... In the many, many years that I've been watching this special, that has never bothered me.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I know that Linus has this sort of religious streak from the comics. Mm-hmm. Although, certainly, it begs the question, if Linus has faith, why does he need a blanket? Which is something that has bothered me for a very long time.
Right.
Him proselytizing at the end, it never bums me out or makes me go, ugh, well, it's, Jesus stuff.
It's just technically accurate. That is technically why Christmas is a thing.
Yeah.
It's like telling the story of like the pilgrims for Thanksgiving or, you know, the death of Christ for Easter or something. It's just that's technically why that's an observance.
Yeah. It's Linus is very pragmatic that way.
Yeah.
What's Christmas about? Well, let me quote it to you chapter and verse.
Well, the Savior was born and that's why we have Christmas. Charlie Brown sucks his thumb. The end. Now take your garbage tree and get out.
These were the two biggest questions I had watching this special. Why does anybody ask Lucy her advice on anything? And in turn, why does anybody put Charlie Brown in charge of anything?
Yeah, and it seems like why, if nobody trusts Charlie Brown with command, why did Lucy put him in charge?
Oh, I have a theory about that.
Okay.
I think she put him in as a, like a puppet. Like
kind
a,
of the like, W to her Cheney kind of
yes,
thing.
Yeah. Like a straw government type thing. Because it's very obvious that Lucy is in charge of the holiday pageant.
And she knows that Chuck will let her be the Christmas queen.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like how you're on a nickname basis with Charlie Brown.
Yeah, and I go way back.
But it's interesting because Lucy spends her time in the strip and in all the specials basically just giving shit to everyone. And then when people have problems, they're like, oh, you know what? I should give Lucy money to help me resolve this.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Charlie Brown does. The special, like I said, starts with a screensaver of children skating, promptly ruined by Snoopy, who has nobody's best interests in heart.
Yeah, I do like that it immediately sets up what Charlie Brown is about because he gets scolded by his best friend for being mopey, and then he gets thrown into a tree by his own dog.
Yes, and that's our opening
that's our
action
hero.
Sequence. That's our James Bond pre-credit sequence. I don't know if I can think of another holiday special, animated or otherwise, where the first line is, I think there's something wrong with me.
I don't think even holiday specials, like outside of that, just any sort of piece. I'm sure there are some, but I can't think of what they are, and they definitely aren't Christmas specials.
I can't imagine how that must have landed on people in the 1960s.
Well, I know that the network didn't, they kind of thought, well, this is too dour. People aren't going to, oh, people like this. We'll have four more of these,
yeah.
You know.
And it is super dour.
Mm-hmm.
It is, like, at the beginning, it's snowing and kids are skating, but it's like this minor key, Belle and Sebastian-y, and it, your toes are not tapping, and it's a little gray, even in its most like HD cleaned up. It's a little gray, it's a little dour, it's a little sad. Two children walk out of a house, one of them says, I think there's something wrong with me, I don't like Christmas, and the other kid says, you're being a jerk.
Yeah.
And then that kid is thrown into a tree. Title sequence, and now we're just riveted.
Yeah.
Wow. Is this kid going to cheer up or recover?
How are they going to force feed the Christmas spirit to this child?
It seems like the thing that is bringing Charlie Brown down more so than anything else, and this is a thing that people talk about when they talk about this special, is the idea that Christmas has become over-commercialized.
They do use the word commercial specifically.
They use that a lot to the point where now I feel like people's top line on the special is, oh, it's like raging against the over-commercialized holiday season. When in fact, it's not.
No.
And I love this special dearly, but as far as like being some like anti-capitalist screed.
Yeah.
It isn't. It seems like there are little things. But there are weird things that Charlie Brown gets upset about.
Yeah, like why, like Snoopy decorating the house. Why is that a problem?
Charlie Brown walks up to Snoopy. He's hanging some stuff on his house. And Charlie's like, what the fuck is going on? What is this nonsense? And it's like, it's just, your dog's just hanging up some Christmas decorations. Most of us, I feel like, by the way, as a side note, anytime I have a dog named Banjo, and anytime Snoopy was doing something especially adorable in the special, when I was watching it, I would look to my dog so I could enjoy adorable dogs in stereo, and my dog would invariably be licking himself.
Which is never a thing you see Snoopy do in this special.
Never. Never at all. Snoopy is probably like he's like that alien from Men in Black, the pug, he's an alien wearing a dog suit. He displays no dog qualities.
No, not really. He eats bones, but reads the newspaper at the same time.
He eats a stack of bones.
Yeah. Ever replenishing.
When we first meet Snoopy in this special, he's sitting atop his doghouse.
After he's thrown everybody into a tree.
Yes. After a long morning of hurting children, what Snoopy likes to do more than anything else is sit on top of his house with a stack of bones that go up to heaven, eating them whole, like...
Just popping them.
Just popping them. And just like, Snoopy, where are the bodies?
Now, here's the thing I've never understood about Snoopy, and this is not a note about this special in particular, it's just in general. Why does Snoopy sit on top of his house when it's snowing? He almost never goes inside his doghouse except to go into storage, basically.
Or to play pool.
Yeah.
It's a tesseract. Is that the right word?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, no, it's Snoopy, and canonically Snoopy, I assume it has everything. His doghouse has everything but a bedroom. Or maybe he's just the outdoorsy sort.
Yeah, because he sleeps on the roof and he does make believe on the roof and reads the paper on the roof. And it's a doghouse. It's not a dog roof, you know.
Yeah. But Snoopy is reading the paper and eating a gigantic pile of bones, like an entire desiccated cow. And everyone's response to everything in this universe is they're initially upset. Like, anytime Charlie Brown sees something, his first response is, what's going on?
What's the meaning of this?
What's happening? But when we get into, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Charlie Brown gets smashed into a tree. We have our opening credit sequence. And then, if I'm not mistaken, the first thing is Charlie Brown wandering out of his house, looking into his mailbox and finding nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He was hoping for Christmas cards. There's nothing there.
Right.
Miserable, lonely. So what's his first impulse?
He passive-aggresses Violet.
He denigrates Violet immediately.
Yeah.
Thanks for the Christmas card, Violet. She's like, I didn't get you anything, bitch. Get out of here.
I love that there are just little moments in just the animation that I love. Like, it's pretty much anytime Charlie Brown says something that's kind of a downer. Like, oh, I'm not happy during Christmas. I don't feel the way I was supposed to feel. And Linus kind of has this moment where he kind of scowls and looks at him.
Yeah.
Like, what's your problem?
There's a lot of that.
What's your damage? Yeah. Like, because Violet kind of scowls and then goes, I didn't send you a Christmas card, and marches away.
Yeah. No. And it's like, well, no wonder you don't have any goddamn friends, Charlie Brown.
You brought this on yourself.
You brought this on yourself. You're a jerk.
Yeah.
Where are the Christmas cards you're getting for your friends? Nothing.
That's true.
You're just sitting there waiting for cards that will never come. And then you are disappointed. And then you are a jerk. It's interesting watching it now because for many years when I was growing up, I was definitely like, oh, I'm Charlie Brown. Nobody likes me, but I have the best of intentions. And if people just saw what a great guy, it's a lot of nice guy behavior.
Ooh, yeah.
A little.
A little bit.
A little. You're vaping, Charlie Brown. It's a trilby, not a it's a trilby, not a pork pie, Charlie Brown.
It's not a fedora.
That's the word I was looking
You're
for.
Downvoted, Charlie Brown.
So we have that exchange with Violet, and then we have one of about a million zillion cul-de-sacs in the episode where it's just children catching snowflakes on their tongues.
Yeah.
And this is actually a nice little segment because it shows what Schultz does so well, which is taking kind of an innocent thing from childhood and then sort of layering on commentary. Mm-hmm. Linus's first response is, needs more sugar.
Yeah.
Which is really funny, especially when you remember, like, all food stuff. Especially when you remember that Dolly Madison Snack Cakes was a sponsor of this special.
Was it really?
I believe so, yeah. And I think if you poke around online, you can find, like, because they had, like, animated commercials that just sort of segued from the special into that. So you never left the Peanuts universe, but it was all but, like, Snoopy coming out in one of those dancing cigarette outfits, only it's like a ho-ho or whatever.
Sure.
And then Lucy outs herself basically as a snowflake hipster.
Yeah. Well, and I like, because in the strip, there's no urgency about most things. They kind of don't exist in time. Just like Snoopy's writing his novel on his typewriter on top of his doghouse. And we don't know where it's going to go. The stakes are real low.
Yeah.
And that's one of those moments where they're just throwing snowballs at a can on a fence. And
oh yeah, that. By the way, knowing nothing about sports, I appreciated Charlie Brown's, like, pitcher's stance.
Yeah,
like there are a couple of moments of, because baseball is such a huge part of this universe, they don't really talk about it in this episode, but this is one of the places where it's like, oh right, Charlie Brown's a pitcher. And then Linus supposedly blows everyone's mind by taking a snowball, putting it in a blanket, his blanket, and winging it at the can. And he's like, I did it. I'm hot shit. You're like 2 feet away from the can.
Yeah.
That's not impressive. You could have just
walked
over. The
snowball left, like, the blanket.
Basically, you just whacked it. You know,
you might have used a baseball bat, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we understand that Linus carries around this blanket everywhere, and his sister Lucy hates it, mm-hmm. cannot stand it. And she's like, what are you going to do with that when you're grown up? And he's like, I'm going to turn it into a sport coat. Boom.
And the shot of Lucy just kind of grimacing in the snow is my favorite shot from any animated special.
This really upsets her.
They really linger on it, and I enjoy that so much.
I don't know if there's enough material to make a sport coat.
Well, I mean, he's going to be 5 years old forever, so.
That's valid. That's valid. Yes. Lucy's like, what are you going to do with that when you grow up? And he's like,
That's not a real deadline.
We're never going to grow up. We're always going to be trapped in these hellish
In
tiny
some
bodies.
Midwestern Neverland somewhere.
Is it the Midwest?
I don't know. I think it's either the Midwest or New England somewhere, but probably the Midwest.
I think I always thought it was New England, but I think that's because
you're from New England.
I'm from New England.
Yeah. Does it resemble New England?
I guess. I don't know. I mean,
it doesn't seem crowded enough. I imagine New England as being, you know, a little more, not quite as flat. It's a very flat sort of universe.
Oh, that's true. That speaks to Midwest then.
Yeah.
There is that opening shot, where we see the entire town. Which I guess at the time must have just, like, blown people away who had been reading the strip for years. And they were like, oh my God, now we're getting a look at the whole universe.
The canon's expanded.
It's huge. Oh my God. I've always wondered if their town had 3 or 4 buildings.
Well, their school has an auditorium. That's something. Frantically editing the wiki and mailing it out on mimeograph to.
Here's a fun fact. Lucy's monologue about how much she enjoys Nichols was originally 90 minutes long.
Is that true?
Absolutely. Nope, okay. It is absolutely not true. But she's very excited about that Nichols.
That was originally, that's where a later special would put a musical number.
Yes.
Her singing about how much she loves Nichols.
I love Nichols.
Nothing but so wonderful as Nichols. Yeah.
And Charlie Brown goes to Lucy, again, for no good reason.
No.
Because she's terrible to everyone.
And why is that not like the, Lucy's gone commercial. Like, why don't his, like, commercialism bells go up when she's like, okay, before we talk about your problems, money. Yay, money!
I don't think he accuses her directly, but I think we see people, specifically women, being very excited about money in this special. Lucy, very excited about money.
Or their hair, yeah.
Sally, very excited about money. Mm-hmm. In the scene later on where... she's like, dear Santa, give me 10s and 20s.
Mm-hmm. There's an itemized list of the things I want, or cash.
Or cash. money. Give us money. It doesn't feel like it going out on a wild limb to say Schultz might have had issues with women.
Well, he's from that time.
Sure.
Yeah, certainly. Because I know we've talked not on recording before about, like, every woman or girl, really, they're all girls in the Charlie Brown universe, is a nag at some point.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible people.
And, like, Marcy is the only one that nags other women, really.
Right.
And she frequently misgenders her best friend.
Not cool.
Not cool.
Definitely not cool. Do a little research online.
Yeah.
Figure out the pronouns.
Just ask.
Marcy.
Just ask.
Yeah, just ask.
Once you're corrected, just... Because she's corrected every time. Yeah. Stop calling me sir.
No, I mean,
going to just keep going.
Look, I mean, this goes beyond the special, but Peppermint Patty can't identify the fact that Snoopy's a dog. So, like, there's a lot of perception problems in this universe.
Sure. In whatever sort of frozen escape they're stuck in. Whatever curse was put on this town.
Charlie Brown goes to Lucy. Lucy freaks out about a fucking nickel for 45 minutes and then is like, all right, well... Let's figure out what's wrong with you. Rattles off a wiki's worth of phobias until we come to the point where we just find out that Charlie Brown is literally afraid of everything and is so excited to be afraid of everything. He yells with such force
that it knocks her off her stool.
Lucy goes flying.
She's beached in the snow. But then he immediately goes, well, actually, I think it's just Christmas. Like, so, well, you knew that, though, Chuck. You
didn't, that was your thesis statement.
You told Linus that not even 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
You just wasted a nickel.
I like that this is, I feel like this is one of the first Christmas-related things in pop culture to be like, not everybody loves Christmas as a rule.
Yeah.
And again, I have to wonder... If that, like, blew people's minds.
Yeah, and that Christmas itself is not the solution. Like, there's no mention of Santa that I can recall. There's no...
No.
They write letters to him. But
yeah.
There's no anticipation of Santa coming. It's not like the Great Pumpkin or something. And the arc of it is so small. I had sort of a larger, like, question about Charlie Brown's placement in this universe. Because I don't know if he's... Is he a punching bag or is he our stand-in? Or is he both? And are the other characters individuals or are they foils for how miserable he is all the time?
It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because he's always in leadership positions.
Somehow, yeah.
He's always either he puts himself, he is the captain of the team. He is the director of the play.
And he assumes those positions willingly. They're not just thrust in.
Because maybe this time it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's when people sort of, broadly interpret, you know, the Peanuts universe, it's always like, well, he's, you know, he's a can-do kind of guy who's just, he's going to stick to it until something works out. Or, if you're like me, you think, oh, he knows that these are all going to end in failure. He knows that this is going to...
He's resigned himself to it.
He's resigned himself to it, and it's like this hellish, vicious cycle where he puts himself in leadership positions, and then it's a failure... And then he's like, see, I can't do anything. And it's like, well, maybe if you just started smaller. Start smaller. Baby steps, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
What do you think, Molly? Do you think that he is he, for me growing up, I was like, oh, I am Charlie Brown. This is me.
Yeah.
So in that case, he was like the audience stand-in.
I mean, I feel like the other characters maybe... with the exception of Linus, are not really fully realized enough for this to be an ensemble thing. I feel like they're all there to not test Charlie Brown. That's not really the word, but they're kind of part of just all this crap that gets thrown at him all the time. And like, cause it feels like he's carrying all the malaise for everybody in this town.
Yeah.
You know, and why is that his job? And why is nobody else bummed about Christmas in the same way?
Even understands.
Yeah.
Nobody, even Linus, and it's interesting that you brought it up a little while back. In the opening sequence, in the pre-credits sequence, even Linus is like, shut up, Charlie Brown. What's wrong with you? It's Christmas. Which is weird because usually he's the one to be a little more understanding.
Yeah.
But he's still a Van Pelt.
That's true.
Where did you, when you watched this special as a kid, Molly, who did you find yourself relating to?
My parents cast me as Lucy really early on.
That's unfair.
No, there's a picture somewhere of when it was David's first Halloween, my little brother David, and they dressed him up as Charlie Brown because he had a very round head. He still does. And they, I think they might have decorated his stroller like Snoopy's doghouse or something. And I was Lucy. They got the saddle shoes and they did my hair. And right. My mom made a dress. And I think they gave David a football to chew on or something. But I was kind of bossy and I was kind of crabby. So they went, that's you.
There you go.
Yeah.
So when you watched this, were you like, it's me. This is the Lucy special with some jerk named Charlie Brown.
A little bit. I remember because I knew the whole special verbatim really early on, because that's how I appreciate things, apparently. The sequence about, like, I never get what I really want. I always get a lot of stupid toys, like a bicycle or clothes or something like that. And Charlie Brown goes, what is it that you want? And in the special, she says real estate. And as a three-year-old, I didn't know what real estate was. So I would say real mistake, because those were two words I knew.
I want a real mistake. I've had it with these false mistakes.
I feel that life hasn't tested me. I feel it's my time to shine.
I want blood on my hands.
I want to look back with regret on something.
That's what I want for Christmas. She wants money. She wants real estate.
She wants to be told she's beautiful.
She is a nightmare.
She usually is, though. I can't think of a time when Lucy redeemed herself in some way.
And the only thing that makes it, I guess, a little better is that none of these kids are great.
No.
Charlie Brown, real problems. Linus, I guess he's okay. He's a little pious.
He's a little pious, and he's kind of, they sort of get into his sort of general credulity in later specials, like with the Great Pumpkin and the Easter Beagle, and he just kind of will jump on any bandwagon.
But again, he has faith.
He has something.
He's memorized the Bible chapter and verse, apparently.
I guess, yeah.
But then Lucy, jerk. Sally, jerk.
But there are, I feel like it establishes a lot of the sort of relationships and sort of the failed sort of romantic connections that the later specials touch on.
Yes.
In these really kind of nice crystalline ways that later specials ruin.
Yes, because again, I feel like this was closer in spirit. You can see the panels.
Yeah.
Almost. Especially in these little like cul-de-sac sections that are not like plot related. You see that Sally has a crush on Linus.
But it's not, I feel like later on she gets real naggy and possessive. Like,
yes.
I'm going to sit in this pumpkin patch with you, but you owe me one, you know, and there's something kind of more sort of sweet about this one. Just like, oh, he's cute, he has a nice sense of humor, and she like carries his blanket for him. Yeah. And Lucy and Schroeder, it's just kind of her picking on him about like what kind of, Beethoven's not on a baseball card. What's this? This is bullshit. Or.
It's interesting. I used to side a lot more with Schroeder, I think, as a kid. Like, oh my God, Lucy will not leave him alone. And then watching it today and yesterday, Schroeder reminded me of like an angry, obtuse music nerd.
Like, yeah, I think he's very well written that way, actually.
Yeah, here's my Christmas music. It's Beethoven.
I don't understand. Clonk.
Yeah, and Lucy's like, that's not Christmas music, dude. And he's like, yeah, it is. Leave me alone. Only Beethoven. It's like, oh, no, you need to open up your mind
a
little
bit. Bring it down to earth a bit,
yeah.
Dude, yeah.
Like, Lucy... Well, go ahead.
The other thing about Schroeder is he is the reason that the rehearsal can't stay on the rails, because Charlie Brown's like, okay, now places everybody, action, and then Schroeder goes back into Linus and Lucy
and
distracts everybody. Like, he's the problem.
Yeah, as obsessed as he is with Beethoven, he doesn't mind pounding out some jazzy little numbers as well for all the kids to dance to.
Just at the drop of a hat, too, when he's supposed to be doing something else.
Right.
And he's prepared Christmas music. We know that he has prepared music for the play. And he never plays it for the director. Why would he do that?
No, because what is even the play?
That's true.
Who knows?
It's got the nativity and shepherds and a penguin and a tree and a queen.
And a Christmas queen.
Yeah.
Which I feel like might not be in the text of the special.
It sounds like panto. It's what it sounds like. Jeremy, you're one half of the pantomime horse.
Every Christmas is the same.
So he goes to Lucy. She takes his money. She rattles off a list of phobias. And after what seems like an hour of that, Charlie Brown's like, I'm sad about Christmas. And she goes, I know exactly how to fix this. Be in charge of a Christmas play. Direct the Christmas play. Has he ever directed anything before? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Has he read the script? Has he had approval? Nothing.
Yeah.
Just walk in to an auditorium somewhere. Mm-hmm. A group of children have been gathered for the first rehearsal.
And there's no director.
There's no director until Lucy brings one in. And again, and Violet and Patty are like, oh, this is going to suck. And as a kid, I was like, well, they should really give him a chance. And now I kind of feel like I can see why you would be concerned about the play. If this is the first rehearsal, nobody has parts. Nobody has seen a script. Here's your director. What's going on?
Well, and I know I asked about, like, how old are these children supposed to be, but it doesn't seem to matter, because who would trust a bunch of 7-year-olds to direct a play in those facilities?
Zero supervision.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Why is the dirty child playing the stand-up bass? Who gave that child the stand-up bass?
He is Pigpen. Pigpen gets a lot of love in this special.
He does. He's great. Like, why is Schroeder playing a tiny piano and Pigpen's playing a full-sized, adult-sized bass?
You know, the music program had just
Why are there two basses? Snoopy's also playing the bass.
It's a very full sound. After that, they did Ornette Coleman's The Shape of Jazz to Come. And that's the instrumentation you need for that. Charlie Brown is a terrible director.
Is he?
Well, I mean, just from that. So they're like, here he is. Here's your director, Charlie Brown. And everybody's like, this is going to be terrible. And even Snoopy's like, boo, you're terrible, Charlie Brown. Which is why anytime you see like Christmas cards or anything with like Charlie Brown and Snoopy making nice and it's like, it's great to have a dog. It doesn't seem like they could really tolerate each other.
There's a lot of ways that this special has been sort of distributed and merchandised that do not make sense.
No.
Like, I drove by a Christmas tree lot in Seal Beach yesterday that was selling Charlie Brown trees, which were just branches of a tree nailed to a couple boards.
I definitely made a note about that, because for a thing that is, like, supposedly railing against the ills of commercialism, you can now totally walk into any Rite Aid and buy a Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Bent over with the one ornament.
With the one ornament. For like $25.
Yeah, wrapped in a crappy little blanket.
No, Charlie Brown's a terrible director because he's like, okay, I'm up against the eight ball here. Nobody thinks I'm going to be a good director. Nobody has read a script yet. I need to give everybody faith that this is going to be great.
I've invented some hand signals.
Which is the other baseball reference.
Right.
For years, I was like, why is he doing this weird like pantomime thing? It's like, oh no, this is like... This is like signals that a pitcher would give to the catcher, I guess. But they are very complex. They're very like, and if I make a slashing motion around my throat, cut the scene short.
They just got the scripts.
Like, what does that even mean? Hark, the baby Jesus has been, moving along.
Here's gold and frankincense. Wait, there's another thing.
Right.
Goodbye.
Like, are they doing this live to tape? Like, what?
Well, parents are falling asleep. We got to get them out of here.
But again, you listen to this. And then, of course, the kids go back into their, you know, dancing, jazzy screensaver mode. Because this is exhausting.
I do adore how much, I know it was just to fill for time, but how much they let us watch all the kids dancing.
Oh, sure.
I really prize that.
Because that's one less thing, new thing they have to animate.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like... They're just going to blandish the hell out of them dancing.
Scenes of graphic blandishment.
Rated NC-17. Graphic blandishment. But of course they start dancing again because Charlie Brown is exhausting and a drip and a terrible director.
Yeah.
And everyone was right to be concerned. And then they hand out the parts. And this is our opportunity to sort of get a 1-second introduction to characters we may not have met yet. Frida, you're the innkeeper's wife. Mm-hmm. And Frida, like, gives her catchphrase. And you imagine a studio audience going, naturally curly hair. She said it. Do innkeeper's wives have naturally curly hair?
That's her catchphrase.
Yay, she did it. She nailed it. She's the one with the naturally curly hair. And then they give, and then we see Shermie, who is sort of the Pete Best of the Peanuts gang.
it's
He definitely existed. And they're like, you're the shepherd. He's like, oh, fuck this. I'm always the shepherd. He's like, I was like, is he from Queens? Yeah. Like, he seems like a little kind of like round the way dude.
Yeah. Yeah, he's equally kind of burnt out by Christmas, it sounds like.
He has the air of someone who read the script from the special and was like, oh, fuck this. I only got one line.
Yeah.
What? I'm Shermie. The fuck is this? I was going to have a whole thing.
What is Shermie's aspiration? Like, when he gets handed a part and is disappointed to find that it's the shepherd, what would he rather have?
Anything but?
The Christmas Queen?
Maybe Christmas King?
Yeah.
I guess. Who knows? Santa? If that exists in this universe, the baby Jesus, yeah, perhaps? But no, every year, a shepherd.
Every Christmas.
Yeah. Well, and then...
There's no wise men. There's no wise men in this play at all.
Well, we don't know that because there are three garbage characters as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, with the little twins, maybe they're the wise men.
Little, the weird shining twins, and then Charlie Brown with hair.
Yeah.
That's in the big dance sequences. It's all, and I'm sure that if we were to do one iota of research, we'd be like, oh,
someone's made a heat map on the internet, or right, like an image map.
That's that's of course the Pickle Twins and Johnny Crewcut. I don't know. it's just interesting to me because like the strip had already been around for years and years, and yet they felt the need. Oh, we need a big group scene. Oh, let's just invent some garbage characters.
Yeah.
They could have thrown any number. Like, I don't know who was around at that point.
Because Patty and Marcy weren't around. There was a Patty, but there was not a Peppermint Patty.
Which always confused me as a child.
Yeah.
It's just like...
There's other names out there. Why did you have to have a second Patty to...
Yeah. A jerk.
Jerks.
So everybody sings and dances, and the rehearsal falls to crap. At which point, Lucy just divorces herself from the proceedings and talks to the dog.
Yep.
Because Snoopy is going to have to play all of the animals, including, what is it, sheep? Obviously.
There's a sheep, a cow, and a penguin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to the dialogue in my head just then.
And then they have a little tête-à-tête, and he sits on her head and does his famous vulture impression.
Yeah.
She threatens him with physical violence, which seems like a weird escalation.
Yeah.
And then he licks her on the face, and she proceeds to go apeshit.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm wondering if, like, if in the 50s and 60s, maybe children died of dog licks. Like, maybe medicine just was...
Well, I don't like being licked on the face by a dog, and I'm a person living in the modern era.
Oh, see, you are not a dog owner. However.
No.
I am. And
dog owners let their dogs lick them on the mouth sometimes, and I've never understood that.
I mean, let is a funny word. I guess it's not like I'm encouraging it.
But I like Banjo as much as literally everybody else, but if Banjo were to lick me on my open mouth, I would be like, okay, excuse me, I'm going to go rinse my mouth. You know, like.
You just sort of make this unspoken compact with yourself and the world where you are just not.
You eventually fluid bond with your dog.
That's one of my favorite household products, fluid bond medicated powder. It's straight from, it's powdered dog's mouth.
When your fluid itches.
My fluid itches, Charlie Brown. No, it's just like you understand. And I think even as a cat owner, you understand. I mean, maybe your cat's not kissing you on the face, but it's just like, I own this thing that walks around outside in bare feet, smells poop, rubs himself on or herself on the grass, and then like climbs into bed with me, bringing, you want to talk about pig pen?
Yeah.
Dogs are just filthy and disgusting. But when, you know, it's just like, oh, the dog licked my face. It's cute. It's nice.
I mean, people let their babies vomit on them, and I understand that.
Let, again, is, I guess, it happens.
You don't invite it, certainly. But you kind of go, it happens. And I don't know. I side with Lucy on this one. I would have to watch the sequence again, but he gives her like her whole head. And her head is 50% of her body.
It is an expressive lick. He has a Gene Simmons amount of tongue.
Yeah, and it makes like this sound. Yeah.
So I guess that is it. I don't know if she needs disinfectant and iodine.
No, yeah.
But my favorite punchline to that is Snoopy's response, which is the work of the great Bill Melendez, the only adult, I believe, to do a voice in this special. Mm-hmm. But I've never decided whether or not Snoopy's response is he, which is, whether he is sad that Lucy rejected him or whether he's disgusted he has human germs.
Oh, that's some deep shit. I assumed it was disappointment at being called, you know, it being so germy that they need iodine to remove him from them.
If I were Snoopy, I would just be like, have you seen fucking Pigpen? That kid is literally covered in dirt, caked. I'm fine in comparison. So it's all falling apart. This Christmas play is falling apart. Lucy threatens Linus with physical violence. That's her answer to everything.
Yeah.
A punch in the face.
Yeah.
Lucy loves money, bossing people around, and punching them in the face.
Yeah.
She's kind of the Miss Piggy of this universe.
She is, yeah.
Which is, it's that weird sort of like, oh, it's like a lady character, like, standing up for herself. Obviously the one in charge. But at the same time, as you pointed out, kind of a harridan nag.
Yeah, every woman is a shrew in some different way in this universe.
Which, and they do seem to wield the majority of the power, but nobody's happy about it.
Sure, but they can't, they're kind of complacent to do anything about it.
Right. This has been feminist theory.
Well, yeah, because I just noticed that when they all scold Charlie Brown for bringing in the garbage tree, it's all the girls that line up to say, oh, you're stupid. You can't even tell a good tree from a bad tree. And then they start laughing and wander away. And then all the boys go, oh, I guess we're laughing now.
Yeah. It's our overlords have willed it. Our nagging Harridan overlords have they have decided this tree is terrible.
Like when the emperor tells a joke and everyone laughs real nervously.
Please don't punch me in the face.
Don't be the first to stop laughing.
Charlie Brown is like, this is not working. Lucy's like, all right, here's what's going to fix this. Not a read-through.
No.
Let's do some improv. Not anything.
Not a Schroeder take five.
Yeah, Schroeder take five. Nothing. None of this. This is her brilliant idea. As the, let's say she's the producer.
Sure.
She makes the decision. Here's what we're going to do. Take five. Director, leave.
Mm-hmm.
Go buy a tree.
Yeah. That's obviously. And Schroeder taking everybody off the rails by starting a dance party every 15 seconds is, they just enable that to happen by sending Charlie Brown out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, we have, and again, you were like, there's no ticking clock. Who knows when this play is supposed to be done? Who's coming to see it?
Yeah, and they got a living tree for who knows when this thing's going to go up.
Yeah.
That's not going to turn out.
Well, they don't. Lucy even says, like, go out and find the biggest, nicest aluminum tree you can find.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is sort of like, oh, see how commercial Christmas is? All of these accusations of Christmas being too commercial, you watch them now and you're like,
it's kind of unfocused.
This isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like, Snoopy wants to win a decorating contest.
Yeah.
And get a couple extra bucks, assumingly so he can buy 400,000 more bones.
Sure.
And Charlie Brown's like, my dog's gone commercial. I was like,
but that's kind of what it's like, isn't it? Because I'm, you know, as we've established, I am pro-Thanksgiving, and I will take the slightest, like, oh, Nordstrom is playing Christmas music already. Bah!
Right.
Team Thanksgiving. You know, it's not, and nobody's actively aggressing against Thanksgiving. There's supposedly a war on Christmas that's happening, but you sort of take anything that you can as like, well, this proves it. This proves that.
He's trying to make pieces fit.
Yeah.
Where they don't necessarily fit.
He brought this on himself.
Exactly. We keep coming back to that.
Yeah.
You brought this on yourself, Charlie Brown.
That's the last special we'll do for the conclusion of this podcast.
So they send the director away,
mm-hmm.
so they can keep dancing around,
sure.
in the same herky-jerky repetitive moves.
Yeah.
That only come...
They're going to perfect that one dance move that everybody knows.
That only come from drawing four cells of animation and mm-hmm. repeating them for 25 minutes. We see that this small town has nothing going on except their Christmas tree yard, which they are treating...
Which is bumping. Yeah.
Like a Hollywood premiere. Like, there are two searchlights the size of the entire... Like... That must be pulling all of the energy from the town.
That might be why all the lights in the other buildings are out.
Yes, exactly. Because this lot, which is abandoned.
Right.
Completely 100% abandoned.
Devoid
again,
of all adults.
Devoid of adults.
We never see them by the tree. They just kind of wander out with it.
They wander. No, it's, there are no, remember, they have, the adults all have melted mouths and just stay in their houses.
they just wander out of the lot with this tree and some like lump of meat that they call an adult hobbles after them.
It's body horror, Charlie Brown. David Cronenberg's A Charlie Brown Christmas.
We have to restart the species, Charlie Brown.
I would like to say for the record, I would buy any tree in that lot.
I would buy a painting of that whole lot, just the whole panorama.
It is, those trees look great.
They look like, yeah.
They are super cool. They are super mod. They're pink. They are perfect cones.
There are some that are like checkerboard. That's awesome.
That is incredible. Like, you could totally see these, like, all set up at some swinging party. Maybe mm-hmm. that's where all the adults are.
Yeah.
Maybe the adults are all at, like, some swinging awesome Christmas tree party, just, like, wearing turtlenecks.
Yeah, over in the Family Circus universe.
Yes, exactly. just, like, you know, and then just, yeah, they're having a great time. It's like, kids, go put on a play or something. we're all going over to this guy's house. We're going to set up a bunch of cool pink trees, and we're just gonna do
Lucy,
it.
Lucy, you got this? Okay, good. We're going to go.
Bye, kids.
Here's $20.
Charlie Brown picks, obviously, the worst tree in the lot.
Yeah.
Not just...
Even Linus is like, I don't know about this, Charlie Brown.
Yeah, Lucy said get a nice aluminum tree, and Charlie Brown... And this is Charlie Brown rebelling or deciding to rebel against essentially nothing.
Yeah, he rebels just for the sake of, well, everyone's excited about Christmas. I'm not, though.
So I'm going to get a garbage tree. And that's not exactly how he says it.
No.
He's more like, he's like, oh, this, you know, this little guy.
I understand him identifying with that tree, you know, because he's kind of the little crappy little needles falling off. The tree is also bald, you know, and he's bald.
Good. Wow.
Right?
Now that's deep.
I know.
Yeah.
I think that's the title of my thesis, my freshman thesis about this special.
The, the piano sting whenever needles fall off the tree is great.
I actually wrote down that I want to make that a text tone.
Oh, nice.
I wonder if I can sample that and make that, like, to cover the edits in this episode. I really that should just be a thing.
Wait, edits? No, this is all gold. He picks the shittiest tree in the lot, which anybody with a functioning brainstem would be able to identify, but is like, I'm doing this in the spirit of not commercial Christmas. Mm-hmm. Again, setting himself up for abject failure.
Yeah.
Like, what is he expecting? Is he expecting to walk in there and have everybody go, oh, we've been wrong about Christmas. We've been jerks.
Yeah.
With our want of nickels and real estate.
You didn't think it through, Charlie Brown.
No.
That's a good title for a special.
Instead, he brings it in, and everybody is rightfully like, what the fuck? What have you done? Again, you miserable failure.
We gave you specific instructions.
Yeah.
And you whiffed it.
but before that, that is when we have the entire Lucy and Schroeder exchange.
Yeah.
And also they get mad at Snoopy for enjoying music, which is, again, like, everybody in this universe is incredulous. Schroeder's playing some jazzy little something, Snoopy dances around, and they glare at him like, how dare you?
Well, they kind of shut people down for being enthusiastic about anything, it seems.
Which is weird, because they also shut Charlie Brown down for not being enthusiastic.
Yeah.
It's
this tightrope that everybody has to walk.
You can't... Maybe they are all little hipsters. Like, you can't be too excited about things. You can't be too sad about things.
That seems like from what I understand about the Midwest, that's pretty pervasive.
Charlie Brown brings the tree back, and everybody's like, how dare you?
You goofed. You done goofed.
You done goofed. And like you said, the girls immediately launch into him and just tear him a new one. And then the guys are like, okay, I guess this is when we laugh.
But people go from like 0 to 60 with their indignation in this universe.
Yes.
It's not just, oh, come on, go back. Go back and get a better tree, Chuck. Like,
that's, by the way, that's a very easy solution. Yeah. He couldn't have spent a lot on that trip or even paid for it.
They probably didn't know it was there.
Because all of the human meat blobs.
They could have just wrapped it in Linus's blanket and carried it out unassuming. This is my brother rerun. He's got, his hair's falling out.
Put him on the back of a bicycle.
Yeah. Stick him in a yarn. But like...
Yeah. Just go back and get another tree.
They're so primed to hate Charlie Brown.
Sure.
It's just as soon as... Anytime he's introduced into a scenario, they go, oh, well, this is going to be the worst.
Yeah. But they're not wrong.
He's not made the best decisions.
Everybody needs to do the work in this special, I feel like. Charlie Brown has to understand... That
he's got to hold up his end.
He's self-sabotaging.
Yeah.
And maybe is not primed for leadership positions. Maybe Lucy should just be in charge of things. Unless Lucy thinks that nobody's going to listen to her and they need to put a white guy in charge.
Well, he's the scapegoat. She sort of funnels decisions through him.
Right.
And he gets kicked for it because that everyone's sort of prepared to do that. Well, and the thing is, Charlie Brown sets his expectations so high and is let down because he's incompetent. And Lucy, sort of on the other hand, her expectations are not that high, but she's so forceful about it. And Charlie Brown's just kind of like, well, I guess I failed. But Lucy's kind of on this track where she's like, I'm going to be the Christmas queen. I am the most beautiful.
What part? Keeping in mind that this is, again, we're going to assume there's an innkeeper, there are shepherds. This is the story of the nativity.
Right.
How do you think the Christmas queen comes into it?
I mean, I can't even... I think that's the joke.
oh, no, but I had...
Like, what you mean, like, what do you think Lucy is picturing?
What for, is the... When Lucy herself? Closes her eyes and it's like, all right, and then there's the shepherd and the baby Jesus is born and then the Christmas queen, like, welcome to humanity, Jesus. It is I.
And so it was that the Christmas queen bestowed Christmas onto the goodly people of Bethlehem. Hello, denizens. Have you met my friend, the baby Jesus?
Or is she the one who... Does the baby Jesus, like, I assume Lucy wouldn't, I mean, maybe there's some intrigue in there. Maybe it's like the Christmas queen has ruled Bethlehem with an iron, of course, she wouldn't be the Christmas queen because baby Jesus hasn't been born yet.
I think that's part of the Christmas queen's ascent to power.
Right.
I imagine that Lucy's vision of it is just she wears a sparkly dress and comes on stage and everyone applauds at how sparkly her dress is. And that's probably as far as she thought it through.
Probably.
Everyone throws nickels at her.
Tink, tink, clink, tink. Clink,
bouncing off her aluminum tree.
Yes. That's why she wanted the aluminum tree, so she could turn it upside down and fill it
and
with nickels.
And shake nickels out of it, yeah.
Crazy for nickels, that lady. Loves them.
Swinging it around.
Loves them. Sally, no dummy, wants 10s and 20s.
Yeah.
Lucy, content with nickels. Yeah. Sally, shrewd.
Sally's ahead of her game, yeah.
Definitely. Everybody shits on Charlie Brown and his stupid garbage tree. And
understandably so.
I mean, maybe the level of indignation is a bit much, but
yeah.
They're just like, we asked you to do a simple thing. You fucked up. Shermie's like, oh, get this guy out of here. I don't know. I just like doing Shermie's voice. And Joe Pesci is Shermie. Oh, what the fuck? Get out of here.
Who's this stool pigeon?
Who's this? Hey, who's this sawed-off piece of shit with this garbage tree? Why I gotta be a shepherd again?
The dry brows are your bangs. What's going on?
This is why they never let Shermie speak again. All right, Shermie, it's your bit. Hey, why I gotta be a goddamn shepherd?
Every Christmas is the same.
All right, get him out of here.
Hey.
This is terrible. Hey! He was convinced he was gonna get a spinoff. He was like Joey.
His hair just looks like a the forest after a forest fire. Get him out of here.
Fuck. If there's one thing you should come away from this with, fuck you, Shermie.
Yeah. Josh and Molly, dump on some children for an hour.
Everybody, and then Charlie Brown's just like, for fuck's sake, would somebody tell me what the meaning of Christmas is? And then Linus comes out, and delivers...
Walks right into the follow spot.
Walks right into the follow spot. Also controlled by children? Or maybe... Or maybe one of the searchlights from the Christmas tree lot.
Just
happened to come.
Not any larger than a 2 searchlight town. That town they live in.
All the electricity in town. This is what it goes to. 2 searchlights for the Christmas tree lot. Snoopy's award-winning doghouse. And a follow spot.
Yeah, what was the other houses have looked like that a doghouse came in first place?
I mean. Maybe just nobody else reads the paper.
Yeah. Those are the bones of all the adults that he's macking on.
He's a monster. It's the bone collector, Charlie Brown. Snoopy, you monster. I love how every year people are like, there's a war on Christmas, and people forget that Christmas is about Jesus. And yet our most beloved holiday special has like a 45-minute Bible passage in it.
Right.
Which not only do we hear every second of, but then 22 seconds later, Charlie Brown marches out,
flashback.
Stands on a hill with his eyes closed, and just sort of lovingly remembers what Linus just said.
Right.
Nobody has any, there's no applause, there's no reaction. Everybody just sort of looks at each other like, oh, that happened. That's weird that yeah. Linus just preached to us. And then Charlie Brown grabs his tree and is like, fuck you, I'm out of here. Goes and stands on a hill, dreams about his friend's words, has a flashback to 22 seconds ago, looks at his dog house, his dog's house, sees that his dog won first prize.
And switches right back.
And is furious. Furious! It is not enough that Charlie Brown's life is a series of failures. He wants everybody else to fail as well.
Yeah, he can't even champion other people's successes.
His own dog, who has won money. His dog decorated his doghouse, won money, and he's like, ugh, my dog's commercial.
I threw it on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. It is not as much of a satire of Christmas being commercialized as it is Charlie Brown saying the word commercial 400 times.
Yeah.
And you sort of get the idea like, oh, I guess maybe people are more obsessed with the physical trappings of Christmas, maybe, and less about Jesus.
Yeah.
But
Charlie Brown has kind of absorbed this malaise from the world around him, but hasn't really developed he doesn't have a solution. It never occurred to him that, because if Christmas is, he's upset about Christmas being commercial, but at the end, it doesn't occur to him until Linus says something like, oh, right, Jesus.
Right. But he doesn't necessarily see, I mean, he has that moment where he closes his eyes. It may very well be the only time he truly smiles in the special and is like, man, Linus sure was right about Jesus.
Yeah.
But
it's just it's that and the, oh, I'm going to direct the Christmas play.
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the only two bits.
That's it. And then he's miserable through the whole thing. And then he's like, my dog won a contest. Fuck him. Which, by the way, so you've learned nothing. You've learned nothing about the spirit of Christmas. Because if you were hep to the teachings of Jesus, you'd just be like, oh, good for you, Snoopy. That's great. Congratulations. You worked hard and it paid off. No.
And it was a fine looking doghouse.
It's a fine looking doghouse.
Did a bang up job.
I love the idea that the other houses are just disaster. Because, of course, these mouthless blobs of adults.
Yeah.
How could Snoopy's like probably the only person who A, can pick up a newspaper.
Yeah.
And B, has the ability, even without opposable thumbs.
Yeah.
The adults in this town must be in bad shape.
Well, with that head to torso ratio, those children were hatched. They couldn't have been born of a woman, you know?
That's horrifying. But you're right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could just be a town where C-section. Although, who knows? We don't know after whatever.
They could have just been born out the side of a cliff, like from Steven Universe, just like kind of hatched out of a rock.
Oh god!
They just have walked out of a swamp one day, fully formed. I guess we'll get to it later, but we'll see how they explain where Rerun came from. Because he probably was not hatched out of a...
You know what? That the existence of Rerun does sort of throw everything off because we know that there is at least one woman who can birth children and ride a bicycle. So yes. Must have working arms and legs.
Yeah.
Probably still no mouth.
We don't know what bicycles look like in this universe, though, do we?
No, we have a pretty good idea.
Do we?
I mean, we see a seat in the back.
Yeah.
I guess we don't ever see a full picture.
It could be, like, just a rickshaw with, like, a meat lump with a web mouth.
I feel like just in this whatever amount of time that we've talked, we have created an entire, like, DeviantArt is going to need another server.
Right.
In order to supply all of this terrifying...
This, like, Lovecraftian backstory.
All of the children in this town were born out of a rock or walked out of a swamp. The adults all basically look like Pizza the Hut.
They were just
from
melted
Spaceballs.
They're just a pile of radiation burns with a face.
The children run roughshod over.
It was the 50s, you know. This might have been the vision. All the children made it to the shelter on time.
That's exactly where this takes place. This takes place in, like, Vegas.
It's basically Fallout. We need a Fallout Peanuts. So bad.
Oh, by the way, poof, it already exists. I'm sure if you typed in Fallout Charlie Boo, your computer would be like, oh, I can't wait to show this to you.
Oh, no.
So,
but is Charlie Brown being pissed about Snoopy's doghouse? Is that setting up a little victory when all the other children dismantle it without Snoopy's permission to decorate the shit tree?
Well, I mean, I assume Snoopy's already won.
He's collecting his cartoony large check.
Yes,
from the Meatlump Council.
The Council of Meatlump Elders.
I just imagine like one of them wearing a sash that says mayor. But he's got Bill Melendez's mustache.
If you've Bill Melendez, who's, I believe, the director. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, he's the director, definitely one of the forces behind it, voice of Snoopy, and had, outside of, like, Groucho Marx and Salvador Dali, possibly one of the greatest mustaches.
Like, when you draw a picture of a mustache or buy some garbage that has a mustache on it, that is the shape of his mustache.
Yes.
Like the mustache bandages or whatever.
It is a heroic thing.
Industry leading.
Yes.
Yeah.
So all the meat lumps have that mustache.
Yeah. Just imagine anytime Snoopy talks, that voice was filtered through a mustache.
So they dismantle Snoopy's house to decorate. Well, Charlie Brown attempts
with literally just kind of a hand wavy.
Yeah. Charlie Brown attempts to decorate the tree by, again, showing he has no concept of physics or spatial relations, puts
the largest ball
on the tree, and the tree immediately just is like, I've had it. And Charlie Brown is like, I can't believe everything I touch I ruin. It's like,
you should know by now.
God damn it, Charlie Brown. I want you to do a little self-care. I want you to love you and recognize when you do stupid things.
Do you feel like, looking back over the continuity of this episode, do you feel that Charlie Brown could avert any of these if he had a slightly better attitude? Like, I know depression doesn't work like that, and Charlie Brown is unquestionably depressed, but like...
Oh, 100%. And we say that both as mental health practitioners mm-hmm. and doctors. We're both very qualified for that.
Yeah, we can diagnose cartoons. No problem.
I guess in this universe, Lucy's a psychiatrist, so
yeah,
whatever.
There's no copay. You just pay in nickels.
All of this could have been avoided.
Yeah.
All of this. Charlie Brown could have been like, oh, I'm sad about Christmas and I probably need to talk to somebody about it who isn't the person who makes my life hell on a day-to-day basis. Like, Charlie Brown, out the gate, he's like, oh, I better see if Lucy can help me. And Lucy seems to just exist to kick Charlie Brown in the sack.
Yep.
Like, that's it. Lucy wakes up in the morning and is like, here are 12 different ways I'm going to make Charlie Brown.
Yeah, Charlie Brown needs to recognize the toxic relationships in his life.
Yes.
And excise himself from them. He doesn't even do that.
And that's all of them, including his dog.
I know.
Who threw him into a fucking tree.
Within the first 60 seconds of the special.
right back to the Daisy Hill Puppy Farm. Listen, hey, I'm sorry.
Hey, what's Spike up to?
Yeah, exactly. Spike does not have the body strength to swing two children around.
Spike's about as substantial as the crap tree that you bought, Charlie.
He's not eating the bones of his enemies, I'll tell you that for goddamn sure, Molly Lewis. The kids ruined Snoopy's doghouse and his award-winning
Dismantled display. It completely. Didn't even take a moment to enjoy his victory.
They wave their hands over the tree, and the tree goes from being a garbage tree to a perfectly nice little tree.
Yeah.
And one of the things that it's one of the moments that I genuinely love about this special, because it kind of reminds me of what this universe is sort of based around, which is, for the most part, there are no real miracles in life. It's more like just tiny victories.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a child. Like, you don't generally, you don't win the spelling bee, and you don't, there's a lot of, your team doesn't always win.
It rains on your baseball games.
It rains
sometimes.
On your baseball games. And then every once in a while, a tiny nice thing will happen that kind of reminds everybody, like, I guess the world isn't garbage.
Yeah.
And this is, especially when you compare it to other Christmas specials where it's like they save the town of Bedford Falls or Ebenezer Scrooge gives everybody in town $1 million and a ham.
The Christmas play goes off without a hitch.
The president helicopters in to just be like, that's the best tree I've ever seen. No.
All the adults come back.
That's definitely not happening. They can't move. But in this, it's just like there was a shitty tree. We made it a little nicer. And like that to me is more of the message than anything else, which is there's not much anybody can do about being sad around the holidays. There's not much anybody can do about the way that people think about Christmas. Mm-hmm. You can help yourself and you can try and be open and helpful to others. But for the majority of people, or for a lot of people anyways, the holidays make you feel weird. And can be kind of a
and
bummer.
It's there's so many different expectations for so many different people, which the special spends a lot of time establishing.
Yeah,
everyone kind of wants something different out of Christmas, which Charlie Brown just kind of labels all as commercialism.
Way to listen to your friends, by the way. Way to support your friends' dreams, Charlie Brown.
But they come together and they say, "Well, you didn't fuck up so bad this time." Is basically the lesson he learns.
You didn't fuck. Yeah, Charlie Brown's a blockhead, but he got a nice tree. And everybody pitched in. Everybody dropped their attitude for a second, and they all had a nice thing. Charlie Brown comes back. Everybody's so happy about what they've done, they break into song. Mm-hmm. And then Charlie Brown comes back, and one last time is incredulous and angry. What's going on
here? Yeah.
What is this shit? Why is everyone happy? Boo! And then they do what can only be described as like a va-va-voom shot of the tree. Like Charlie Brown does.
He gives it the up-down, yeah.
Yeah, he does like a double take. He crouches over. Yeah. His eyes pop out of his head. And then
turns into a wolf in a zoot suit and starts howling.
Literally all the shot. And then they just a very slow shot of the tree from the top to the bottom. And all it's missing is that.
And it's not a better drawing of the tree. It's just they took that cell and zoomed in on it a little bit.
And then everybody sings Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Credits.
Yeah.
No Christmas play. No resolution to anything.
Yeah. You can't really even extrapolate, like, do they go back to the auditorium and continue with the Christmas play? Or do they all go their separate ways? Like, it doesn't solve any of the other problems. It's just, we're not as mad at you about this tree as we were 5 minutes ago.
And Charlie Brown, in turn, is not as miserable about Christmas as he was 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
A tiny, tiny victory. If you've never seen any Charlie Brown or Peanuts-related stuff before, do you feel like this is a good introduction to the world?
I know it was my introduction to the world.
What's your first memory of seeing it?
I mean, we had it on tape. I remember what the box looked like. And I was the kind of kid that watched... I mean, a lot of kids are like this, I guess. Well, kids don't watch tapes anymore. Ha! But, you know, I would watch it over and over again until the tape wore out. And my parents would sometimes cue me just as like a party trick. Like, look, our daughter knows. Hey, Molly, what is it that you want? Yeah, mistake. And I don't have any specific memory of watching it because I watched it so much, you know.
That it all just became...
It just kind of just took a little space in my brain and just kind of lives there now.
What was your attitude towards Charlie Brown growing up? Like when you were watching, if you watched the special a million, you must have given this a fair amount of thought watching it over and over again. Were you like, everybody's a jerk to him?
Well, the concept of directing a play and buying a tree seemed like adult things. So just that he could even, they could even send him out on an errand to go buy a tree seemed like...
All free-range children, to be sure.
Absolutely.
Like, in this day and age, the special would be about 1 minute long, and then somebody would, like, call Child Protective Services
yeah.
and be like, why are all these children wandering around? What are yeah. you, all a bunch of meat lumps?
Well, I mean, I've always... I identified with Lucy as a child because that was what was cast on me. And it's been interesting sort of recognizing that I don't identify with Linus as much as I used to. Because Linus, I feel, is optimistic, and he, you know, wants to kind of, like, oh, no, Charlie Brown, I'll tell you what Christmas is about. And I want to be that person, but he's also incredibly, he's just a credulous dummy sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks there's a pumpkin that's going to, like, because the Great Pumpkin is basically a Christmas special with a Halloween costume on, as yeah. we talked about. And I didn't read the strip very much. I saw the cartoons first and then went, oh, there's a comic strip as well that I get for free in the newspaper? That's great, you know.
But Lucy was who?
Lucy was my template for a while. She was crabby, and I was crabby, and she was bossy. And I had a little brother with a round head and not very much hair.
Have you ever been bummed out about Christmas, watched this, and been like, I guess Christmas is okay? Does the special do what it sets out to do, in your opinion?
I mean, I just like it because it... Well, I mean, because it is different. It doesn't have... the big arc, like Santa shows up and solves all the problems and, you know, there's no exchange of gifts. There are
almost no Christmas signifiers.
There's no reference to like Christmas morning or yeah. Christmas Eve. There doesn't seem to be a timeline. It just generally takes place in the Christmas season. And everybody in some way is disappointed and nobody really listens to each other. And it has all the elements of like preparation for Christmas, which is the most frustrating, disappointing part of Christmas.
Right.
And I can't think of another special that... I feel like it executes that well, just kind of conveying that general disappointment. And the run-up to Christmas seems to take forever, you know?
Especially when you are a child.
Yeah.
It's that weird, that sort of just, like, just dead zone between Thanksgiving and Christmas, where it's just, like, there's a lot of preparation. Yeah. I still have school. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll get a tree, but eventually... Mm-hmm. I'm writing lists, but I see no presents. Yeah. It's just, they're just, it's Bacchettian.
Yeah.
It's waiting. They're all just waiting for something that never comes.
Right.
And then the tree goes from being garbage to not being garbage, and everybody's like, good enough.
Yeah. Little victories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good enough. Molly, any other thoughts?
I was going to just, I think kind of as a... peg for the end of each episode, we could just ask, what have we learned?
Oh.
Have we learned anything?
Molly, what have you learned?
I've learned that you shouldn't put a bulb the size of your head on a stick and call it a tree. I've learned a lot about the adults in the Peanuts universe and what their life is about.
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
Terrifying amount of what, of what you've learned there.
Some sort of Lovecraftian hellscape. What have you learned, Josh?
I mean, I think we've established that Snoopy is a monster.
Yeah.
I think that's really important, that there is sort of in those theories that's like Jar Jar was actually the most powerful Sith Lord. I'm a little terrified of Snoopy after talking about this.
Yeah. And I never really thought about before how unfocused Charlie Brown's indignation is.
He's mad. Yeah, I learned Charlie Brown is mad at everything.
He's just got this baseline rage.
Yeah.
That he just kind of scattershot. Why are people singing around a tree?
Boo!
At Christmas?
You're all commercial.
Am I right?
His obsession with calling things commercial reminds me of like when a kid learns about one of life's injustices and then just says it.
Yeah, or just when a kid learns a new word and doesn't use it correctly.
Right. I learned that Charlie Brown doesn't know what commercial means. I learned that Christmas trees in the 1960s
were awesome.
Awesome! Were awesome! That checkerboard one. You cannot stress that enough, how great that is. I learned I learned that if you want to get people to your Christmas tree lot, get the biggest searchlights that you
can find.
Drain
the town of power.
Drain the town of power.
So the only place they can go for light is your tree lot.
But then it doesn't work.
It doesn't.
I learned that Charlie Brown is a terrible director. And I learned that making wild gesticulation hand motions is not acknowledged.
Baseball hand motions don't solve every problem, Charlie Brown.
Not acknowledged as any kind of directorial technique. Like, I don't know how long he would get at Juilliard or NYU. Like, just the teacher just going like, now, what is that you're doing exactly? Oh, when I flail my arms around, that means, you know, think about your objective. No, there's no, like, that is not, that is not a Meisner technique or anything like that. I learned that Charlie Brown is a blockhead, but he got a nice tree.
I think there's a lesson in that for all of us.
Really?
No.
I'm Josh Kagan.
I'm Molly Lewis.
This has been the Peanuts Gallery.
Thanks for listening.
Questions, comments, concerns? Tweet them at us at @peanutspodcast.
You blockheads.